You're listening to On The Record.
If you're hearing this, you are indeed on the record here with Madeline. 9:40 is the time. And as it's 9:40 on the first Thursday of the month, it means it's time for us to head to the Language Lab. Today we are joined by musician, writer and linguist Rosie Sartoris, learning more about the work done at the PKKP Aboriginal Corporation. We also welcome Community Language Officers Chenise Fleming and Joan Ashburton. Welcome, everybody.
Hi, how are you going?
Very well, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today for Language Lab.
Yeah, our pleasure.
So I'd love to know, Rosie, a little bit more about the language program at PKKP.
Yeah, of course. So PKKP is the Burrabunti, Gurama and Binagura Aboriginal Corporation, and the office of that corporation is in Karratha, so all of us are usually in Karratha. We're actually over in sunny Darwin at the moment, and it's very warm, I'm sorry to tell you. But PKKP country is in the Pilbara, so it's roughly between Onslow and Tom Price. There's no towns in that area, so it's kind of hard to know exactly if you haven't been there, but you can find a map if you wanted to know specifically. But the languages program at the corporation started in 2023, but there's a long language journey before that. Language is eternal, obviously, so, you know, Binagura and Gurama, people have been speaking their languages since the start of time, so the language program is just the latest step in that very long journey. But PKKP members have worked really hard to protect their country and their culture for many years, but language is this kind of intangible cultural material that people don't really understand how to hold on to it, you know, outside of the community, I mean. They can't really understand what it is because it's not something they can pick up and look at. It's not a tree you can see. And so sometimes, you know, we find in communities around the country that language can get lost amongst these pressures of, you know, mining industry and heritage compliance and native title legal issues. So the program that PKKP has established is designed to fight back against all of those pressures and create space and support for Binagura and Gurama languages so that they're resourced and they're given voice again.
Yeah, such an important program. And now one of the first of its kind in the area. How do you build a language program from scratch?
Oh, yes, that's a great question. I love a three-word slogan. You know, the only thing of value that the national politics has taught us is that a three-word slogan can take you a long way. And for me, when we're building a language program, it's all people, people, people. So it's, you know, your elders and your knowledge holders who have had that information taught to them by their old people. It's the young people who are up and coming, like Chenise, who is just started as one of our language officers and who's, you know, leading the charge for the young Binagura people. It's also people who aren't interested in language but who are part of the community. So, you know, Joan and I were talking before we came on air about this, how, you know, the old people had the knowledge but they weren't allowed to speak. And I'll let Joan talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, people were told that they weren't allowed to speak, and so they didn't teach their children because they were, you know, in fear of the consequences. And so, you know, those children and the grandchildren and so on, you know, haven't had access to that knowledge, and so people aren't always sure what a language program can actually do and what, you know, what it looks like. So our job is to make sure that everybody, no matter how much they know, no matter how much they're interested, has access to the language, can feel like it's theirs because it is theirs. I love my catchphrases. So another catchphrase I have is that language lives and dies on the tongue. So you can have books and they're brilliant and you can have posters, they look pretty, but if you don't have people speaking with one another and sharing that knowledge, you know, from person to person, the language, you know, really struggles. So our job is to make sure that people feel supported to do that.
Rosie, I just got goosebumps a little bit. Language dies on the tongue. That's so visceral in its message there.
Yeah, it's a really important. I think it's one of the things that, you know, we're really strong on, and that we, all of us in the language team, have been talking about while we're in Darwin, because the ladies are up here doing a course in linguistics, and I'm a linguist. I love linguistics. It's very interesting and important, but it's not the language. You know, it's not the knowledge that the old people had or anything like that. So, yeah, it's just a part of the toolbox. But, you know, the language being spoken is the important thing.
Now, you're all up in Darwin at the moment. I would love to hear from Shanice and Joan. Bring them into this conversation, your community language officers. Love to hear about a little bit about what language groups they both come from and what are their dreams for the language.
Awesome. I'll pass you on to Joan first.
Morning, Joan.
Good morning. I'm from the Porukundi Huruma language group and part of the PKKP from the West Pilbara in Karratha. And I was nominated through my elders to come out this way to get a bit of training with the linguist team here up in Darwin, and I'm finding everything, you know, going really well so far, and it's very important for us to take back what we learned here. We already have a word list put on my dictionary. I know my mum's language, I speak that quite fluently. She spoke language all the time in the home, outside of the home. And with my dad's language, it was a little bit like only a few words he would say to us. And most of it, I had to guess what he was saying, because I didn't want to stand around and look like I was silly. So with his language, it was mainly he cut it out and spoke the English, because working with white people, back in the days, they had to go with the English language and not speaking the Aboriginal language. That was pretty much banned, working alongside, you know, European people. And gathering language, I reckon that is very important to our people, and handing it down to the next generation.
Yeah, definitely super important to do that. Now, Joan, the training program, how long is it? How long have you been up there in Darwin?
Since Friday, we landed in and we stayed in over the weekend and settled down. And Monday morning, we came into the classrooms and it's been full on every day, like we're buggered, you know, pretty much. You know, the Darwin weather has been very kind to us, because I live in Perth and, you know, it's freezing down there.
It is. It is very cold this morning. I could tell you that, Joan.
Yeah.
Now, Shanice, I'd love to hear a little bit about your language group and your experience at the training program.
Oh, my God. So my language group is the Binigra group, and that's through my dad's side. My gosh. it's been interesting. It's the first time I've never been able to speak Binigra because it wasn't taught. So it's doing the language program, the training here in Darwin's been interesting, and learning so much to kind of get started with our stuff. I guess all your research. Recording. It's been an interesting journey so far.
Yeah, quite involved, it sounds.
Yeah,
Rosie, it sounds like you're working them both very hard. Are there any challenges for a language program like this, Rosie?
There are, you know, in any kind of community program, you know, the challenges are, you know, have a long list And, you know, I take my hat off to the ladies that I'm working with. I'll also give an honourable mention to one of our other language workers who's here, but who's not quite, you know, ready to get on radio. It's a big step. So we're really happy to have Christy here. She's one of the other Binagra language workers. And she's supervising me, making sure I say the right thing. But I do. I have to take my hat off to these ladies because, you know, I'm a non-Indigenous linguist and I don't come from that area, from the Pilbara. I didn't grow up in this area. So, you know, if I really wanted to, I could walk away. I'm not going to. But if I wanted to, I could. And, you know, that's a great privilege that I have. But the ladies I'm working with don't have that privilege. You know, the people in this language group are their family. You know, it's their brothers and sisters, mothers, grandmothers. And that is, it's a big job. You know, if you imagined, you know, working in a place where almost everybody you have to work with is in some way connected to you and your family, that is a huge pressure that, you know, language workers, not just these ladies, but, you know, around the country have to bear. And so it's one of the unique but really big challenges for a language program is making sure that we, you know, set these things up sustainably and set them up to support the people doing the work. You know, my job and all of the other people in the program who aren't members of the community, our job is to make sure that the language workers and anyone who does this work is supported because it is such a taxing job. You know, we have all the other kind of administrative stuff like having enough funding, everyone has that issue, you know, making sure that there are enough people with the right skills and, you know, there's long distance driving, so all those kinds of things, but they all really, you know, pale in comparison to the really heavy cultural load that, you know, Aboriginal language workers around the country and Torres Strait Islander language workers too bear. So I'm always really aware, you know, when we're doing this work about how we can build a program that supports people to stay in this work for the long term, pay them well, you know, make the work very clearly defined so they come to work and they go home and they don't have to work on the weekends, although we know that happens anyway. And just building a really sustainable, caring space that helps people because they're the ones, like I said, people, they're the ones who make the work happen.
Such important and incredible work that you're doing with this program. And now just one final question and then I will let you get on with the program. What will the future hold for this languages program?
It's funny, I was having a think about this morning and I realised that actually there's no definite answer to this. You know, the possibilities are endless. It could be anything, but it will ultimately be decided by the language community. You know, my job is to help people find the right tools to do what they want to do, help them make those tools work, help them fix them if they break, you know, help them design the shape of things and, you know, all of that kind of architectural language. But at the end of the day, you know, whether or not I can say a word doesn't mean anything. So what the future will hold, if it was up to me, it would be, you know, language being spoken every day by everybody. I'm getting a few nods, so I think maybe that we all feel that in this room. But, you know, there is an immense joy in being surrounded by people who do this kind of work and who value this kind of thing. And I think if we can just spread that joy one person at a time and bring some of that language back that, you know, people had to hide away, that will be the most important thing because it doesn't really matter what we do, it's just the fact that we do it.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it'll be so incredible to see this program only grow in size and language. Rosie, Shanice, Joan, Christy, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Rosie Sartoris with Shanice, Joan and Christy, community language officers there at the PKKP program up in Darwin at the moment.